News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I cannot describe the depths of my personal sorrow at the suffering of so many as I continue to deepen my own understanding of slavery's enduring impact.
That was Britain's Prince Charles addressing the Commonwealth Summit about slavery. Details coming up. Also, Ukraine's foreign minister says his country is ready to export much-needed grain to Africa as soon as Russia lifts its blockade. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Britain's Prince Charles expressed his personal sorrow today for the nightmare of slavery and its long-term impact as he addressed the opening of a two-day summit by the 54 member countries of the Commonwealth. Ushin Wimana has details from Kigali, Rwanda.
Prince Charles' speech came as colonizing countries grapple with their often oppressive histories in Africa. Some have returned diluted art and even remains of a murdered leader to their countries of origin, while others have expressed regret over their actions, which include lingering racism. The United States is considering reparations for descendants of the slaves who helped build the country's economy.
I want to acknowledge that the roots of our contemporary association run deep into the most painful period of our history. I cannot describe the depths of my personal sorrow at the suffering of so many as I continue to deepen my own understanding of slavery's enduring impact. If we are to forge a common future that benefits all our citizens, we too must find ways, new ways, to acknowledge our past. Quite simply, this is a conversation whose time has come.
Charles and heads of government also reiterated the urgent needs to fight climate change, be prepared for future global shocks, and create strong synergy to mitigate the long-reaching effects of Russia's bloody invasion of Ukraine. One of the issues of discussion this year is how to speak with one voice on an issue like the Russia-Ukraine war, which has driven up food, fertilizer, and oil prices, hitting Africa particularly hard. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said more than 25 million tons of corn and wheat are piled up across Ukraine, allegedly held hostage by Russia, whose own would-be exports are entangled in Western sanctions.
One of the greatest affronts to everything we stand for is Russia's invasion of Ukraine and Putin's blockade of the ports that would otherwise be shipping food to the world's poorest people.
Charles highlighted other shocks the world is facing, the climate change and the global health crisis. He said the partnership with the Commonwealth member countries could be a shield.
Treasure the friendships we have built over these past 70 years and look forward to their deepening in the years ahead. As we build back from the pandemic that has devastated so many lives, as we respond to climate change and biodiversity loss that threatens our very existence, and as we see lives destroyed by the unattenuated aggression of violent forces, such friendships are more important than ever.
Rwanda is assuming the leadership of the Commonwealth Secretariat from the United Kingdom. Rwandan President Paul Kagame says his country will keep realizing the meaning of the Commonwealth.
Everything we do, including joining the Commonwealth in 2009, is aimed at making sure that our people are connected, included, and forward-looking.
More than 60% of the population of the Commonwealth countries are youth. Leaders say that's the engine of everything they are eyeing to achieve. Rwanda is hosting the CHOGM after Uganda in 2007. 15 years later, leaders of 54 member countries are back in Africa to forge new innovative ways of creating a common and a shared bright future, leaving no one behind. For African leaders, the target is to build a prosperous and resilient continent. That is an idea embedded in the African Union's Agenda 2063, Africa We Want. The leaders at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting are expected to decide on membership requests from Togo and Gabon. The meeting ends Saturday. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
A top United Nations diplomat says Russia's war in Ukraine is taking a toll on African economies. UN Assistant Secretary General Ahuna Izzia-Konwa says inflation and trade disruption have put countries in a very precarious situation. Some African experts are calling for action from African governments and from the United States. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Chalawi has the details.
Some African countries have relied heavily on Russia and Ukraine for strategic imports like wheat, fertilizers, and steel. In 2021, for example, Kenya imported almost 30% of its wheat from Russia and Ukraine. Cameroon imported 44% of its fertilizers from Russia in the same year. However, shipments of most exports from the two countries have halted since Russia invaded Ukraine in February. Shortages of fuel, fertilizer, and grain have amplified global inflation, including in Africa. As planting season in West Africa begins, analysts fear that this disruption could have hurt crop yields and threatened food security in the region. United Nations Assistant Secretary General Ahuna Izzia-Konwa says Russia's war in Ukraine has disrupted Africa's recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic due to rising food and fuel prices. Izzia-Konwa, who serves as the UN Regional Director for Africa, recently said the war has put communities and countries across the continent in a dire situation.
The direct effects of the Ukraine war include inflation in the prices of food and fuel, disruptions in trade of goods and services, a further tightening of the fiscal space, and a reduced flow of development finance.
She made the comments at an event at the U.S. Institute for Peace in Washington. Izzia-Konwa said inflation is one of the most serious effects of the war in Ukraine for Africa. At the same time, she said Africa's development funds were shrinking when it needed more development funds. To counter these challenges, she suggested some areas should be priorities for African countries and their partners.
We must reframe development finance. We have to rethink the whole architecture. And this must start by enhancing domestic resource mobilization. We must prioritize actions that ensure that the continent retains a much greater share of the value of its strategic mineral, agricultural, and human resources.
She said Africa and its development partners need to invest in food and fuel security, greater productivity, and manufacturing and exports. Johnny Carson, former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Africa, described the African Continental Free Trade Area, which was signed 4 years ago, as possibly the most important pan-African agreement of the last decade. Speaking at the same event as Izzia-Konwa, Carson said it could ease the impact of the war in Ukraine.
It has the prospects and possibilities of really transforming economic relationships around the continent and transforming Africa's economic and commercial relationships with the world.
He said the United States has looked at Africa as a partner, but sometimes it has not taken the partnership as seriously as it should. He said the United States should frame policies that encourage Africa's successful integration. That means working more effectively with organizations like the African Union, the Economic Community of West African States, and the Southern African Development Community. Carson said the new U.S. International Development Finance Corporation helps get U.S. government investment to African businesses and development activities. And he said that would help African economies confront the impact of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
Ukraine's foreign minister says Kiev is ready to export much-needed grain to Africa as soon as Russia lifts its Black Sea blockade. In a U.S.-arranged online briefing to journalists yesterday, he blamed Russia for the global food crisis affecting millions of Africans and called for more African support against Moscow. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
Ukrainian Foreign Minister Dmytro Kuleba said his country and Africa need each other to overcome the global food crisis, which he blamed on Russia's aggression.
We want to export our agricultural products to you as badly as you want to receive them. And there is only one reason why both ends of this supply chain, which is us and you, cannot benefit from these exports. It's the Russian blockade of Ukrainian ports as a result of the Russian military aggression against Ukraine.
Ukraine is a major supplier of wheat, corn and sunflower oil to African countries, and since Russia's invasion began in February, Africa has faced food and cooking oil shortages that have left an estimated 400 million people on the continent food insecure. While drought and conflict have also played a role in the food crisis, Kuleba focused on the actions of Russia. He said Russian forces have taken 400,000 tons of grain crops from Ukraine.
Russians also steal agricultural equipment from Ukrainian farmers. Tractors, combine harvesters and other tools in Donetsk, Kherson, Kharkiv and Sumy regions of Ukraine. Russian forces have riddled Ukrainian fields with mines to prevent farmers from cultivating their crops for years. According to the recent preliminary estimates, about 13% of Ukrainian territory has been contaminated by Russian mines and other explosive remnants. This creates threats of a multi-year global food crisis.
Fred Munene is an agronomist and farmer in Kenya. He says Africa, for now, shall fight to get the food stock in Ukraine out and invest in its farm to be food secure.
We need, if possible, to get away. Or now we are going to solve the problem short term, and also on long term. Short term is getting the food that is already produced, and this is only available in those two countries. Long term, look for other suppliers also, or construct industries in Africa who will be supplying the fertilizers and other farm inputs, because that is the biggest challenge.
Kuleba says Africa can play a role in ending the conflict between the two neighbors.
African states have a crucial role in this, and many already work together with us to achieve it. African capitals matter, and they do influence Russia's position.
However, African countries on the UN Security Council have been reluctant to pressure Russia based on historical ties to Moscow and current geopolitical concerns. Hassan Khananji, head of the Hone Institute for Strategic Studies, says that Africa's say in the conflict is limited.
They do not have the kind of leverage outside diplomatic engagement and outside trying to appeal to both parties to see the need to unblock the wheat supply, which, of course, Africa relies very heavily on.
Senegalese President and African Union Chairperson Macky Sall is expected to meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in the coming days, but no firm date has been set. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
A Nigerian senator and his wife are in custody in London after allegedly bringing a boy into the United Kingdom to have his organs harvested. Reuters, quoting police sources, says Ike Ikwirimadu, 60, and Beatrice Ikwirimadu, 55, were charged with conspiracy to arrange travel of another person with a view to exploitation, namely organ harvesting. The couple appeared in Uxbridge Magistrates Court in London, where the court was told the child involved was a 15-year-old boy. Ekweremadu is an opposition senator in the Nigerian southern state of Enugu and also a former deputy Senate president. Police said they had been alerted to the alleged plan by reports of possible offenses under modern slavery legislation. The child involved has been taken to safety and work was underway to provide additional support. Neither Ekweremadu nor his wife could be reached for comment. Tunisia's Interior Ministry said today that it has information about serious threats to the life of President Kais Saied. Spokesperson Fadil Khelaifi told a news conference that the goal was to undermine Tunisian public security and that the plot had been foiled. Saied's opponents accuse him of a coup for steadily consolidating his powers to rule by decree and for preparing a new constitution that he plans to put to a referendum next month. Opposition to Saied's move has broadened over recent months as nearly all major political parties as well as the powerful labor union have come out against his plans, holding street rallies against him. While critics of the president say his moves have raised concerns over rights and freedoms won in the 2011 revolution that brought democracy, there has been no widespread crackdown on the opposition. Saied says his moves are legal and were needed to save Tunisia from years of political paralysis and economic stagnation. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Please note we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Somali President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud said today he has tested positive for COVID-19. Abdelkarim Alkar, Mahmoud's spokesperson, said the president had returned to Somalia on Friday from a trip to the United Arab Emirates, where he met with the UAE President Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan, and Mohammed posted on Twitter that he had no symptoms but would remain isolated for a few days. Former Angolan President José Eduardo dos Santos, who ruled Africa's second biggest oil-producing country for nearly four decades, is reported to be in intensive care at a clinic in Barcelona. Citing sources close to the former leader, Portuguese news agency Lusa says the health of the 79-year-old dos Santos is deteriorating and that he has been receiving medical treatment since 2019. His rule was marked by a brutal civil war with U.S.-backed UNITA rebels that lasted nearly three decades, which he won in 2002. From there on, he presided over a subsequent oil-fueled boom in Angola that enriched elites but did little to alleviate widespread poverty. The former president stepped down from office 5 years ago. He was replaced by President João Lourenço, who, despite being from the incumbent People's Movement for the Liberation of Angola, MPL party, swiftly moved to probe allegations of multi-billion-dollar corruption during the dos Santos era, targeting the former leader's children. Last year, dos Santos returned home for the first time. He went into exile in Barcelona in April 2019. Malawi's Vice President Saulos Chelema has denied allegations implicating him in a corruption scandal involving businessman Zenit Sattar, who has been charged in the United Kingdom. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
An anti-corruption bureau investigation this week named Chelema as one of four top government officials who allegedly received kickbacks from Sattar for government contracts between 2017 and 2021. The revelations led President Lazarus Chakwera to suspend Chilima's official duties Tuesday, pending further investigations. Sattar was arrested in Britain last year for allegedly bribing Malawi government officials to win contracts from the police service, defense force, and immigration department. Satam denies the accusations. In a statement Thursday signed by Chilima's aide Pirirani Piri, the vice president faulted the SCB for making allegations against him without providing any evidence. He said he is ready to challenge the allegation should the SCB expedite the process and quiz him. Michael Kayata, executive director for the Center for Human Rights and Rehabilitation, says Chilima should not have blamed the SCB.
What Chilima should have done is to respect the independence of SCB and you wait for the due process to begin so that he can have the opportunity to clear his name.
Chilima is the president of the United Transformation Party, a key partner in the governing Tose Alliance, which is led by Chakwera's Malawi Congress Party. In a statement, Chilima said that the fight against corruption must not be abused for political and other objectives. Political analyst George Piri says he suspects politics at play, given Chakwera's reaction to the SCB investigation.
The president also said that he acknowledged that the SCB report was not concluded on the allegations made against the vice president. Now, if that is true, why did the president make a decision of taking off the duties of Chilima?
Yesterday, the SCB arrested former Inspector General of Police George Kainja, one of four officials alleged to have received kickbacks from Satam. Victor Juwala, an SCB lawyer, said the bureau would make more arrests soon. On a Friday, a group of supporters of Chilima's party, including legal experts, gathered at Chilima's residence in the capital, Lilongwe, after hearing that SCB officials would interrogate him there. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta, Malawi.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On May 16th, the people of Somalia elected a new president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamed. The election was the culmination of a long and much-delayed process, with the country governed by a president whose four-year stint in office had expired in February 2021. The United States congratulates the people of Somalia on the conclusion of their national electoral process. We also congratulate Hassan Sheikh Mohamed on his election as the President of the Federal Republic of Somalia and look forward to working closely with him and the new government, said Secretary of State Antony Blinken. 4 years of political infighting have resulted in the neglect of critical issues. For Somalia to thrive, the national government and federal member states must quickly reconcile and together tackle the vital challenges facing Somalia. Two problems in particular must be addressed post-haste, said U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Linda Thomas-Greenfield. The first is the need to eliminate the danger posed by the Al-Shabaab terrorist organization. Somalia's security and the security of the region rely on us using every tool in our arsenal to fight terrorism. That means providing support to the African Union Transition Mission in Somalia, or ATMIS. It means using the Somalia sanctions regime to designate Al-Shabaab operatives who continue to threaten Somalia's peace and security. And it means alleviating the horrific humanitarian conditions that inspire extremism. The second deadly challenge the new government must address is the impending humanitarian disaster caused by the worst drought in four decades, affecting over 6 million Somalis, by skyrocketing food prices, and by Russia's brutal war of choice against Ukraine, which continues to prevent wheat and other foods from reaching Somalia and may push the country into famine. In April, the United States announced more than $200 million in additional assistance to respond to humanitarian needs in the Horn of Africa, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. Tied directly to the humanitarian situation is Somalia's economic well-being, which will depend on its ability to meet the conditions required for reaching completion point under the heavily indebted Poor Countries Initiative, she said. Somalia now has an opportunity to focus on the political, economic, and security reforms necessary to advance the interests of the people of Somalia, said Secretary Blinken. The United States looks forward to partnering with Somalia's leaders to achieve our shared goal of a peaceful, democratic, and prosperous Somalia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Justin Twain, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.